Hello all, and welcome to the PVD Cast, your favorite nonsensical podcast brought to you by me, John Orlando. Hope you are doing well out there. I appreciate you tuning in to episode 80, and it's going to be a great episode. It's going to be a fun episode. I had a blast doing it, and I can't wait for you to hear it. But you know what? I just got to get one thing off my chest. I got to talk about one thing. And that is, over the last several episodes, I've had some great guests come on. And I appreciate the fact that those guests, they did a little research. You know, they got an email from me. They didn't know who I was. They listened to a few past episodes and they go, "Hey, John, you got a great thing going on here." And for those folks that have complimented me over the last few weeks, I want to say thank you. It means a lot to me. It's really awesome to hear somebody go, "Hey, man, I didn't know anything about your podcast. I listened to some episodes. They were entertaining. I enjoyed them." And that's great to hear. So thank you to all the people over the last couple of weeks that have given me that awesome compliment. And you know what? Let's just be completely honest. My guest for this episode is one of those folks. Mr. Jack Wallace is going to come on and talk about creating comic books, because he's an independent comic book creator here in Columbus. He has the publishing company, the comic book company, if you will, called Disposable Fiction Comics. Now, Jack's got a real interesting kind of niche, if you will. He likes to focus on very short stories, and we're going to talk about why that is and some of the inspiration for coming up with that particular concept. But he also does a very good job of taking social issues and kind of pushing them into comic books and kind of having them fly under the radar. You know, dare I say, maybe somebody might be duped into thinking that, "Hey, I'm just reading this silly comic about a priest or about Frankenstein or whatever, but man, there's a real message hidden in there." And for that, I like that. I think that's really cool, and I think that takes a certain creativity that not too many people have. And so you're going to hear Jack and I talk all about a variety of different topics related to his comic book company, as well as his love of comics. So I think you're going to enjoy it. It was a fun episode to do, and hopefully you'll like it as much as I liked doing it. Gotta say, real quickly, the renovations to the office at Casa de la Orlando are still ongoing. Therefore, I'm recording this intro and this end in the kitchen. So if I sound a little echoey, please pardon that small interruption, if you will. Yes, the renovation to the office is almost finished. Almost finished. Got to move all the comic books back in there and get the computer all set up and everything. But for the time being, I'm finding various other places in the house in which to edit and piece together these episodes. So bear with me. Hopefully here by next episode or the following episode, I will be back in the office where I belong, talking to you all about, well, just whatever I want to talk about. And you know, one of the things I want to talk about right now, I want to talk about the coolest place in Columbus. That's right. I want to talk about Big Fun Columbus. It's the place to go for all of your toy needs. I mean, if you want to pick something up, like some toys from your childhood, you know, like He-Man or Star Wars or Strawberry Shortcake or Gem or Indiana Jones. It, what? You didn't know there were Indiana Jones action figures and toys back in the early 80s? Well, you need to stop on down to Big Fun, because the guys and the girls down there will school you on Indiana Jones toys and any other toys you want to talk about. That's right. All you got to do is stop on over to 672 North High Street in Columbus and check out their selection. Talk to the folks down there. They're super friendly. They will help you find the toys that you want, the toys you desire, the toys that, hell, you deserve, man. You can follow them on Facebook by going to facebook.com/BigFunColumbus. And you can even follow them on Twitter, @BigFunColumbus. So, with that being said, I'm going to take a very short break. You're going to hear a quick musical interlude. And on the other side of that, you're going to hear my conversation with Mr. Jack Wallace. Hey, welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another installment of the PVD Cast. I'm sitting down here this evening with Mr. Jack Wallace, the man behind Disposable Fiction Comics. Jack, how are you?
I'm good, John. How are you?
I'm doing well. So you're the editor-in-chief and also the writer on many of the different projects at Disposable Fiction Comics.
Yes.
So
tell us a little bit about your Disposable Fiction Comics.
Disposable Fiction Comics is pretty much they're short stories. They're bite sized, kind of easy to read. Typically about 5 pages or so. We do have ones that are branching out into being quite a bit longer, but it started out as just kind of an anthology of short 5-page stories.
Now, why did you decide to go with the short story? Because, I mean, it's unique. It's something different out there. And, I mean, yeah. I imagine that that's probably one of the reasons. Marketability, maybe.
It actually, because it was it evolved that way, is okay. The best way to put okay. it.
But it didn't start out that way. You just thought, I have a bunch of cool stories and I want to tell them.
Yeah, well, it's I had a lot of longer pieces. In fact, when I started out, like I had just grandiose, you know, 70 pages of like written pages that turned into like a 200 page graphic novels. And then I realized that artists didn't want to draw them, so that became like a big issue. I had to, and I didn't, you know, at the time, I think I was, you know, I was making $9 an hour. I was working at the North Market for a while. Mm-hmm. And so when I started doing it, pushing them out, I had had some interest from a couple artists, and we had tried it, but it just turned into this gigantic thing. And I couldn't really afford to pay people, and I couldn't really get, I couldn't get enough support and backing from one solid artist. In fact, when I tried with one artist, we had been going for a while, and then he's like, you know what, I realized how much work this is going to be. I'm like, yeah. I hadn't really put it into those terms. So anyway, I had, when that had kind of failed, I'd tried getting artists for a long time, and when you're not paying people, it's a lot harder. So,
sure, right.
I didn't really have the whatever money it would have taken. So what happened is, then I started putting out ads, and I had started with these. There's a forum called Pencil Jack. I don't mm-hmm. know if you've ever heard of it. Pencil Jack is just like, it's a thing for writers who write comic books that say, "Hey, put in some scripts. Let's see what you're writing." And then so they had like little short competitions, and they were like, the minimum was you had to be 5 pages. So I had started submitting scripts to them and winning, and I think I lost every contest I was in.
But you got the word out nonetheless, right?
Yeah, I got other people to review it and critique okay. it, and that was a big deal. And then afterwards I was like, well, I have all these stories, you know, I might as well see what I can do. And then I found that artists were a lot more willing to, for 5 pages, you know, they were willing to kind of brazen a shot and see how okay. it went from there.
Okay. Because, I mean, I think that most people probably listening at home probably think, oh, a comic book creator has this giant idea that they have to map out, and it's going to be over 12 issues or 15 issues, mm-hmm. or, as you said, a graphic novel of 200 pages. So that's why I think that it was unique and different, yep. your take on taking a look at those bite size, as you like to call it, stories. In fact, you stated on your website it's perfect for the bus ride home.
Yeah, well, the idea behind Disposable Fiction was an idea that you can pick up an issue, or it's just something that you can read while you're sitting on the train, sitting on the bus, and then you can throw it away at the end. But, you know, while the comic's not there anymore, the story still kind of sticks with you.
Yeah. Yeah, it beats being on your phone, people. Try not to be so technological. Seriously, it is refreshing. I joke about that, but it does sometimes annoy me. This is totally off topic, but sometimes it does annoy me when people, yeah. you look around in public, you're like, get off your phone. Like, yeah. There's no reason to be on your phone. I mean,
yeah, I am with you. Actually, the dinner, I think if I see two people at dinner that and both of them are on their phone, I'm like, that is kind of sad. We've kind of lost that.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it's like, just can't you just enjoy just being here?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I know there are times that I'm guilty of being on the phone, too. I'm not going to lie.
Oh, absolutely.
But, you know, I think that I'd like to keep it at a bare minimum.
Yeah, you set boundaries.
Right,
dinner table
exactly.
is a place that
dinner
we do
table,
not, you know, we don't
you know,
have
if you're waiting in line at the supermarket, get off your phone. Because inevitably what happens is you forget that you're next.
Right.
And, you know, yeah, so anyways.
I'm with you.
So from now on, pick up a comic. Stand there and cause a delay
right,
at,
yeah, exactly.
the market, at the supermarket with reading a comic. But, all right, so let's maybe backtrack a little bit. You've been doing this
sure.
for 6 years.
Yep.
So how did you get started?
Well, I had originally started I had this idea with my brother, actually. I remember the moment that it started, and I had this. I was talking to my younger brother, Skylar, and we were talking about. We had been talking about, you know, bioengineering mm-hmm. and how it would be cool if you could splice a human with an animal.
Okay.
And I had originally thought, well, that would be really cool if they could really make a minotaur, you know, like in real life, like a bull and, you know, the human torso and everything. And then, you know, it kind of progressed from that to this weird idea of bioengineering these mythical creatures and these people. And that's what started out as the original graphic novel. That was the original idea that I had. And that's when I decided, well, I'm going to try and see if I can actually write that and see. I mean, that'd be kind of fun anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And then as I kind of progressed, you know, and I had written it in prose form, you know, which is like, you know, regular book form. I had no idea about anything that I was doing or how to do that.
So you just learned on the go?
Yeah.
You kind of learned
absolutely. Yeah. I went to the library a bunch and I picked up old books that would have, you know, I found a couple scripts in the very back of some of the issues that kind of mm-hmm. described, oh, well, you know, here's panel one, here's what he's saying, and
sure,
you know, kind of describing how you write a script. And then from there, I just kind of picked up book after book of how to do it. And developed that process that way.
So, growing up as a kid, were you a comic book fan?
Yeah.
You were a comic book nerd like all of us?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. When I was growing up, we used to go to Tennessee a bunch from Ohio, family vacation trips. My dad would always, and I know several other guys have mentioned the spinner racks. The spinner racks are huge.
Oh, yeah.
And so we would always pick, me and my brothers would pick up, you know, a bunch of different issues that we could, and then we kind of trade them off. And, you know, my dad liked it because he could just keep the kids in the back. We could read and not, you know, terrorize them. it worked out great. And so, you know, I was huge into Marvel I was a Marvel and DC. I still picked up the Justice League and Batman and Superman, all those guys. And I was, you know, my personal favorite was the Incredible Hulk, still to this day.
Really?
Absolutely, yeah.
What about the Hulk appealed to you?
You know, the Hulk was a force of nature. The Hulk was not, I mean, he was the guy, like, there was nobody was more powerful than him.
Sure,
I mean,
yeah.
You know, and when you think about the big leagues, it was Thor, maybe, and Superman, for sure, but he was really the guy and just the idea that, I mean, he was just a berserker. Not you know, in the same way that Wolverine kind of was, but more punching, less slashing.
I guess. And the lack of any type of... Well, I mean, he had an intellect, but it was a different intellect. It was more, I guess you could say, primitive. So So that appealed to you.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, just the full throttle, you know, Viking yell type of, I'm going to just destroy everything until I'm done. Yeah.
Do you still read Marvel, DC, and
I do.
Stuff
well,
that,
yeah. I will pick them up now and again.
Okay.
You know, I think in college I kind of switched out. I kind of got burnt out on comics for a while, and then in college I kind of switched over, and that's when I kind of picked up into the Sandman was a big one. You know, a big one. Transmetropolitan.
That's a favorite of mine.
Yeah.
I love Transmetro.
Oh,
it's phenomenal writing.
Hunter S. Thompson in the future is
it
really
is.
All that
it
you
is.
Need to
and
say and how you
know.
Report.
And I have a friend who is who's a huge fan of Hunter S. Thompson. I told him, I said, dude, you got to read this because it's him. And I think the thing, when I go back and look at Transmetropolitan, and I didn't realize this till a couple of years ago, like how innovative it was.
Because mm-hmm.
it came out in 1999, and there's things like Skype that we have nowadays that was presented in that book. And, you know, I recently, within the last 3 or 4 years, read and heard, actually, I should say, that Warren Ellis does a lot of research about a lot of different things before he starts into a story.
Yeah.
This came from a DVD called G.I. Joe Resolute, which was an animated movie, if you will, of G.I. Joe, and he wrote it, and they talked about how he did a lot of research, and it clicked. I'm like, that's why Transmetro was so cutting edge.
Yeah.
Is that I'm sure that technology, I can remember hearing whispers about it. Oh, video conferencing, that'll be the wave of the future, you know? And so no doubt that's why that stuff was in.
Yeah,
like,
and
it was great.
He's a master storyteller. He's really good at his craft, too.
He is.
And all those guys, you know, I think that kind of era had a big wave. It was kind of, it broke after the, after Neil Gaiman and Alan Moore kind of ruled that little section, right after that came Warren Ellis and Why the Last Man, you know.
Oh, Brian K. Vaughan stuff. Right, yeah, Brian K. Vaughan right, stuff. Yeah.
All those guys kind of, it was amazing because you kind of petered out of the superheroes. And for me, that was kind of one of the first times that I had kind of picked up, oh my God, you don't have to read about, it doesn't have to be capes. I love capes still, but
sure, yeah.
It doesn't, there's a whole world out there. You know,
indeed.
I mean, I remember looking at even Harvey P. Carr's stuff and Robert Crumb's, and I'm like, oh my, yeah. Where you realize this is totally taking a new edge to what you can do with comics. You didn't have to be a fan of it, but you had to at least enjoy the innovativeness of it. You know, and learning how to break things up.
Who are some of your inspirations when you sit down to write? I mean, they could be comic book related, or they could be just, you know, writers in general, or whomever.
Yeah.
Who inspires you when you sit down to write a story?
I mean, for me, you know, I Sandman to me is still one of my favorites, hands down. And again, I Transmetropolitan would probably be number two. The third is probably a toss up between either like V for Vendetta, maybe, or. Preacher was also one of my favorites. Grace Ella,
Garth Ennis.
Garth Ennis, yeah, that's right, yeah. Also amazing.
Yes.
I also kind of get out of comics. I read a lot of books too, so I really like John Steinbeck. It's one of my favorite authors. He's kind of one of my favorites because, you know, a lot of his issues kind of deal with money as kind of one of the central themes, and I try and do that. I try and at least attack that in the same way. So I read a lot of I read an unhealthy amount. It borderlines on really kind of it's
obsessive.
Just a little bit, yeah, a little obsessive. A little obsessive.
I got you.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah,
yeah. No, I mean that's one. I'm gonna just jump off of that real quick to say that I love to read. And I just don't make enough time to read enough. So, but you know what? Since you were talking about some of the influences of like John Steinbeck and whatnot, I've noticed that going through your catalog. I'll throw out a couple of the titles that you guys have. Like for example, The Marriage Act. Do you want to quickly summarize for our listeners what that story is about?
Yeah, the Marriage Act. Basically, there was a war in America, and we are in desperate need of population. And so Congress enacts a law that says that everybody has to be married of someone of the opposite sex in an procreative relationship by the age of 30. And the story kind of follows a gay man and a bachelorette that they live together to try and circumvent the law.
Okay. So since we're talking about focusing on social issues, is this your personal thoughts on same-sex marriage and that debate?
I think that it was kind of the opposite of what would have happened.
Really? Okay.
Of the marriage. Like, I thought of to me, I kind of thought of it as Rick Santorum's wet dream. It's a world in which...
That's becoming a hashtag this episode. I'm just saying it right now.
To me, I mean, and that's what it was. It was this idea that, you know, if we are so against this idea of same-sex marriage, what would have happened if it would have been the opposite of that? What would have happened if we decided, well, okay, well, you know, we're going to go completely in the other direction, and we're really going to say, you know, not only you don't have a choice anymore. This is kind of it. So I thought that it was kind of an interesting idea to play with because. You know, and it was kind of during the same-sex debate, you know, and so it was topical as well, and meaningful, I thought, you know.
Well, let's talk about A Matter of Perception, which is another book that you have out that deals with a little bit of the topic of organized religion. So do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, I will say beforehand that, you know... you know, the things that you're not supposed to talk about at the dinner table.
Sure.
Religion, politics, and money... are my favorite things to talk about, and God, you know.
Well, because I don't mean to interrupt, but those are interesting topics.
I agree. Completely.
They're interesting topics because everybody has a different opinion on them, and if you can debate those and talk about those in a mature manner and a respectful manner, I don't see what the problem is.
I
was raised very similar, that you don't talk about religion, politics, you don't ask a lady how old she is or how much she weighs.
Right.
Those are the topics that you don't talk about.
That seems like like, why? It seems silly to me that we kind of push all this. This is all the stuff that's off the table, but this is the stuff that matters. I mean, that's sure. the stuff that really
sure. is I don't know about the age and the weight of women. I don't know about that.
Yeah, that one may not. Still, probably you're right. I would probably that stay away from that one. Just yeah, as a courtesy,
exactly, as a courtesy. But anyway, so
yeah. So a matter of perception. The idea is that it's a priest in the 60s, and he has. His congregation has gone downhill. No, there aren't as many people coming to church anymore. He runs into a young man at confession that decides that has a vial of LSD, and this is before LSD has gotten real big, so he didn't really know what it was. And the priest ends up confiscating it from him and doses his congregation with the LSD. And during one of the funerals of one of the most popular guys in town. So the town has this big reaction. They all have this religious experience during the funeral, and they see heaven and they see hell, and afterwards, you know, nobody's the same. They stop hitting their kids, they stop stealing from work, and they start going back to church, of course. And so it's really going well for the priest, but he doesn't know whether it was the drugs or whether it was God that made the change in these people. So he has to dose himself with the LSD to kind of go through that trip and figure out for himself what it was.
So how did you come up with this story? I mean, I think this out of all of your catalog, this seems like the most abstract and unusual tale to tell. So what was the inspiration behind it?
You know, I...
At least that's my opinion. You know, yeah. The most abstract and unusual, I guess you could say. Like, what...
Well, I mean, it originally just started out as being, I wanted to have the story originally was just that you wanted to have a priest that had faked a religious experience. And so I'd kind of gone through a bunch of different versions of how he's going to do that. Is he going to have a fake angel come down, and how's that going to work out? And then I realized, you know, if he had drugs, he could really induce this kind of experience, and it would make the whole story a lot easier to tell.
If I may ask, is this based on your own experiences?
No, I'm actually an atheist. So okay. I don't, you know, I've been to enough churches that I kind of understand, you know, and I get the premise. I understand how it works.
Sure. Okay.
It but was never
your own personal beliefs.
Yeah, no, yeah, but I do like the idea of God, and I like sure. the idea of how that works, and I like the, you know, for people that really believe in it, it's a core system. It's something that changes them and it makes them who they are.
Sure.
Absolutely. So I thought it was interesting just to kind of deal with the fact of if you are a person and you have an experience and that changes you, and, you know, some people will tell you that, you know, it was God that did that to you. The other people will tell you that, you know, it was the drugs that did it to you.
Or some other experience.
Or some other experience, yes, right.
Right, sure.
In the sense of this
in
story.
This comic, yeah,
right,
sure.
Yeah. And the idea was, well, does that really matter? I mean, if the point is he made this choice to do something good, these people stopped doing something bad and they made this choice to do something good. Would it really matter whether it was God's or the drugs that did it, and how much of a role does that play? And I just like dealing, you know, kind of.
No, it's thought provoking. I think that's one of the things I was like, wow, that's very, very interesting. Well, you also have Frankenstein for Mayor, which.
Yeah.
I don't know how much explanation
that needs. No, that's the beautiful thing about it. It's like it really is self-explanatory.
Self-explanatory, man.
yeah. Well, the premise is very easy. It's basically that Frankenstein, the Dracula is the current mayor of Transylvania. It's modern day. Dracula's the current mayor. He does a really terrible job. He only does the stuff that the Viking or that the vampires really like. So the witches and werewolves get together and they decide to raise Frank from the dead to get him to run in the next election. So it's also a little part. You know, it was kind of my take on partisan politics. But it was definitely. The idea was really. I like to pitch it as it's kind of like. The West Wing meets the cast of the Munsters. You know, it's a little bit of it's a political thriller, but it's also, you know, very much weird.
Okay. Well, hey, like I said, I think it's this most self-explanatory title.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, that makes sense.
Well, you also have, of course, the different disposable fiction comics, volumes 1 through 4, which yeah. have a variety of different tales in them. I picked up volume 3 from you. And what constitutes the stories going into the volumes? Because I noticed that with volume 3, the theme was money and lies. So
yeah.
is that a conscious effort, obviously? And are there some things that you wish that maybe should go in a volume that maybe?
To be honest, it was the opposite. It was
really
Well, I had all these stories, and I'm like, well, we're going to break them up into different issues,
okay.
and that way we can kind of sell them one on one. How the hell are we going to group these things together? And then I just was kind of like, you know, I kind of found some of the identifying traits that were okay. that were underlying these group of stories, and I thought, well, and that's pretty much how I broke it up.
Okay.
But there was no, I didn't want to do a, you know, these are all, it just happened to turn out that way.
Okay, it wasn't a preconceived, no. I'm going to write these stories and they're all going to go in this particular volume.
No.
And it just was, they all were there and we just yep. kind of grouped them based on theme or based
well,
on
well, and because that was kind of one of the really interesting things about disposable fiction is that each story, the genre changed.
That was what I was going to mention. In volume three, there's I guess you could say a... secret operative type of story, if you will,
right.
and then just a modern day, you know, activist story, and then mm-hmm. a more, I guess you could say, ancient Asian type of
yeah.
you know, story in that. And so I think that that's actually really interesting as well, to switch genres constantly.
Yeah.
And was that an idea you thought of?
That was just what I was always shooting for. Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I wanted to try. You had Steve Steiner on here too, and
sure.
he had mentioned that, you know, when he sticks with one thing, he kind of gets bored.
Sure.
And I felt the same way. Like, I really like to change it up as much as I possibly can. And that was kind of one of the ideas of disposable fiction, is I wanted to experiment, and I want to change and use different stories all the time, and never kind of, you know, the idea of writing the same two people forever sounds interesting for, you know, I could probably do it for a little bit, but I really enjoy just changing everything all the time. I think it makes it fresh and interesting.
And I think the artwork also is something else that changes from story to story, and I think that also adds to the complexity of the stories and also makes them, you know, their own unique perspective, as any art does for story. But
I agree.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got really incredibly lucky with all the artists that I worked with.
And they're from all around the world too.
Yeah.
In the biography. I mean, Argentina, Texas,
yeah.
Pennsylvania, et cetera, et cetera.
Indonesia to, I think, Bolivia. We had some from Italy. We had Chile, Canada. I mean, all across the United States, a couple Californians. I mean, just everywhere. You know, these people were all pretty incredible, and they we're all really interested in, and their art is just stands out.
You're
kind
sure.
of blown. And you know, one of the things when I was doing it is I thought, well, you know, I could do I could give one story to each person, and I thought that it gives its own story each a different feel. You know, when it changes the atmosphere mm-hmm. of the story completely. Whereas I think that if you were kind of doing one artist, you kind of have a sequential thing, you know, you have mm-hmm. one theme that you want to provide. And that's one thing I really liked is it really changed it up. It feels different on each story.
And were you very laissez-faire, so to speak, with the artists? Go, hey, this is the idea. Just whip out some art. Let me see. How was that creative process, if you will,
mm-hmm.
when you were coming back and forth with different ideas?
Yeah, they were all scripted stories,
mm-hmm.
And then they would come back to me with, you know, these are some of the actual ideas. These are the images that I brought up. These are the character sketches I've done, and you know, but the book took really a long time because, you know, I'd also had a whole series of, oh yeah, no, that sounds great, and then just no email back
you have a lot
of drop offs, you
right,
have a lot
sure.
of people and so, you know, to get people to commit to it and do 5 pages, you know, it worked out, and but yeah, it did take a long time to kind of get through that whole process.
Get through the process. You have another new one, Spellbound.
Yep.
Which is kind of a, dare I say, it's kind of a little bit of a fantasy detective story, so to speak.
Exactly right. So, yeah.
You, go ahead and can you summarize real quickly what that particular book is about?
Yeah. It's my version. It's basically Law and Order meets Lord of the Rings. It's exactly how I'm pitching it. And it's supposed to be exactly that. It's about two elves that are sent from their king to go into a dwarf land of people who live underground, and they are there's been two murders. They're sent to investigate two different murders that have happened. The culprits seem really unlikely because it's an old woman and a young child, and so it's kind of up to them to kind of figure out how that happened. And you know, they of course run into trouble. They run into wizards, they run into a golem, they run into all sorts of different creatures.
And this is more than just five pages. This is a giant story arc, if you will. Or right. Maybe not giant, but a longer story arc than your other particular
This is a one-shot. It's 22 pages, mm-hmm. You know, so from beginning to end. So it is going to be an entire, just a one-story complete. And, you know, one of the things is I love Marvel and I love DC, but when it comes into that, you're reading like 30, you know, you're on episode 34 of a 70-page thing,
yeah,
or a 70-issue thing, and so then you got to go back to the store and you got to get the pull list, and that's totally how they've made their money, and I get that. My thing is, I wanted to be able to sit down, I want to have one thing to read and then have it be done, and I wanted to be able to have one complete thing. And so, I didn't, you know.
There won't be any crossovers.
Right, yeah.
Disposable Fiction Comics is what you're saying.
Yeah, you don't have to.
Wars.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
We are definitely working on graphic novels, but when we do that, we want to have it all completed, and, mm-hmm. you know, you don't have to come track me down another con to kind of pick up the issues.
Now, Spellbound is not all set to go, correct?
It's not yet.
It's still in the developmental stages. Yeah,
well, it, all the art and lettering and everything's done.
Everything's done.
I just got to. We're almost there. I guarantee by the end of the weekend, it'll all be set up. So we will be able to sell them on the website, and at the next con I'll definitely have printed issues.
Cool,
and stuff,
cool.
So.
You know, one thing I think I kind of omitted, and not on purpose, just by accident,
sure.
you've used the pronoun we, because you do have a partner in
yeah.
Disposable Fiction Comics, and you want to talk a little bit about Mr. Allen? I apologize. Again, no disrespect to him. I just kind of overlooked, you know, aspect.
Chris Allen, I do have a partner, Chris Allen. He joined earlier this year, I want to say. And he's in Scotland, so we work primarily through email. He was one of the contributors to Disposable Fiction, our first run, our first anthology. He had done a bunch of lettering work, he'd done some coloring work for us, and then he has, you know, he's really kind of taken our books to the next level, you know, whereas I really had no idea what I'd been doing from the very get-go. You know, he's had a lot of experience in it. He knows what to do. And he does all the other stuff that you never, ever in your life think about that you would need to do.
Can you give an example? Could you give?
He created our logo, for one.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So in some of the inside covers, mm-hmm. you know, we have... you know, also available from
sure,
Disposable
yeah.
Fiction, you know, we have, you know, pictures of the other covers. He created all of our back covers because, you know, for the first time we didn't have backs for our books, and that really didn't look very good.
Yeah, right.
So he, and not only that, I mean, he's also given invaluable feedback to all, he's read all the scripts, he decides what, you know, gives me feedback on what I like and what I don't. And yeah, I mean, he's kind of a master of many things. He's done a lot of lettering and a lot of coloring for all of a lot of different stuff. For the Frankenstein for Mayer coloring, mm-hmm. he did all that. And yeah, I mean, he's an invaluable guy. He's really taken this whole thing up a notch. So many thanks to you, Chris.
Yes. I'm sorry, Chris, that I omitted you. I apologize. Well, let's talk about your website for a minute, because
yep.
One of the things that you just tweeted out, I think a day or so ago, if you will, is Trouble in Paradise.
Yep.
It's kind of a very short story. Mm-hmm. You want to talk a little bit about that particular comic real quick?
Yeah, Trouble in Paradise is, the idea is that it's about two people who die, it's about an older couple that dies and goes to heaven, and then heaven doesn't, it's just too perfect. It's so perfect that one guy really can't get used to living there without the struggle of life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he had gotten so used to working two jobs and or whatever, that he, you know, when it came down to, you know, all of your family members there and everybody's healthy all the time, and, you know, all the people that, you know, all the, he sees all the artists that have been, you know, he sees Jimi Hendrix and,
yeah,
and Michelangelo,
sure,
and all that,
yeah,
stuff, but they're not, their work is not really the same because they're not really struggling with the same thing they had before. So it's just kind of the idea of, well, if it is that perfect, I don't know if you ever heard of the Talking Heads song called Heaven, where
I've heard of it. Yeah. I haven't heard it in probably like 20 years. I won't.
It's pretty much basically like that. The idea is that it's, you know, you go to heaven and your favorite band plays a song, plays your favorite songs every night. And so if that's the case, you know, what would it really be like?
Yeah, I think it would be incredibly boring.
Yeah, I think that's kind of where I was going with it.
Oh, okay. All right. Now, will that be put into an anthology later on?
Oh, no, it's actually in the anthology.
Okay, it's in the anthology.
Yeah.
So these are items that you've pulled up and you said, I'm just going to highlight them on the website, if you will. And
well, what we're doing is we're using it as a webcomic forum. So,
okay,
you know, for the disposable fiction stuff, we have, you know, the short 5-page pieces and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
We're just going to be presenting a new one every month.
Okay.
And just because it's, again, kind of learning how the business works, one of the things that people, you know, one of the biggest ways that people get attention is that you have a webcomic.
Sure.
You don't charge anything for it.
Right.
People come and they check out new material all the time. So we're trying to do that. We're trying to learn how to, we're trying to garner an audience by producing new material that people can read for free.
Mm-hmm.
And then just checking that out. And then for the other pieces, we'll kind of keep those a little bit bigger, and those will be, you know, pay for on demand and that sort of thing. But we do want to have something that you can come and check it out and see what you like and get a taste for it and read it for free. So,
and then hopefully go over to the shop part.
If you like the idea, then you can come and check it out, and you can buy the other 3 stories that would go along with that issue or whatever. Yeah.
What are some of the pros and cons about being an independent publisher, independent creator?
Well, you know, it was funny. I was listening to a podcast today.
Yeah, I've asked that question before.
On
this very podcast, but I'm always interested to see if it differs from person to person.
Well, I think I agree that I think a lot of guys have said that, you know, the freedom is the best part.
Yeah,
you can actually get to do what I mean. Honestly, like, I had pitched a thing to Oni Press, and it was one of my first when Oni was kind of giving us submissions, and it was the story about which we haven't done anything with, but it was the first issue of the series called 5 Days, where, you know, it was 5 days about the end of the world, you know, a meteor's coming, and it was about this guy who, he only had 5 days left, and he was going to spend it doing drugs and having prostitutes and whatever. And so I wrote the script out, and I loved it, and I pitched it to him, and they're like, no, we're not going to do that. I'm like, oh, I guess I can see that. So, I mean, the idea is that you can really whether anybody would have picked up A Matter of Perception is really unlikely, because a lot of publishers are not – they're not really going to go for the throat. They're not really – they're not trying to go for the weirdest
controversy.
Right, yeah,
controversial.
Yeah,
I
exactly.
suppose that, yeah, I mean, I think that if Marvel would pick that book up, there would be a firestorm.
Right, yeah, exactly.
Especially from, you know, with the as we talked about, it's the topic you're not supposed to talk about.
I agree completely.
And so I think that certainly would be it. So
I think, I think that was kind of one of the points. I think that, you know, there is, you kind of make a choice, and you choose to either go the writing route, where you just want to try and break into the business, and you want to say, okay, well, I'm going to try and write for Marvel, or I'm going to try and write for whoever, I'm going to try and write for Oni, and then you try and just pitch them ideas, and I think it'd be cool if Green Lantern did this, you know, whatever. And for a lot of people, that's their dream. I never really had that, you know. My thing is, like, I wanted to just be weird and do the
tell
weirdest
your story.
Do the weirdest thing possible. And I had so much material that I had thought up over the time. I'm like, it's just easier if I put it out myself. But then you're writing, you're finding artists, you're getting contracts.
So this is into the con part. Of
exactly. you got a production schedule. You're trying to make a budget. You're paying for it all yourself.
Sure. Yeah.
You're the same way you are. I mean, you know, you're doing it because you love it. You're doing it because you find something really gratifying about it.
Mm-hmm.
you want, it's kind of interesting when you get into the business part of it, because then you're deciding, oh, well, I wonder if this is kind of a commercially viable product. I wonder if this is something, and that's taken me a long time to even get to that point, because even when you're standing at a con and you have this book and you're handing it to someone and you're like, yeah, it's this story about this priest that doses everybody with LSD, and you see their eyes glaze over and you're like, oh, and they take a couple steps back. You're like, you have to kind of realize that you kind of have to get in other people's heads, and you kind of, I mean, like Frank is the opposite. I pitch people to Frank and people eat it up. You know, they're like, yeah, this, it's easy to tell. Yeah, you already know who it is, and you get all the characters and stuff.
And it still is an interesting premise, even though you know about Frankenstein. Right. It's a different take on it. It's, yeah.
Exactly.
Sure. Yeah.
So, I mean, you kind of learn what it is to be commercially viable, and I think that's kind of, there's a lot of learning lessons. It just takes forever to get that end of it. I'm still learning a lot about the business and how you want to go about doing it. So, but like I said before, now is the coolest time in the world to be doing any of that stuff.
Sure. Because you would never be able to meet with artists from all around the world.
Exactly.
10 years ago.
Exactly.
Or 15 years ago. You would be stuck with dealing with people that you could reach out and touch base with, whether mm-hmm. it's in Columbus or Cleveland or whatnot. And so, most definitely technology has helped out tremendously. I mean, we talked before we went on to record this podcast. This wouldn't happen without technology.
Yeah.
You know, having your own, essentially, radio show, you know, you'd have to physically go to a radio station.
Right.
And again, you talk about the freedom. I think that's one of the things that we also talked about, is I like the freedom of just talking whatever I want to talk
exactly.
about. Exactly. And not have to worry about... If I accidentally let a cuss word slip, who cares?
Right, yeah, exactly. Know,
something along those lines, so.
Well, and that's, I mean, it's an amazing day to be able to do that.
Sure.
And the internet is kind of an amazing part of that.
Sure.
It would not have been the same way. You know, I think when I first started out, before I started finding out that there's forums that you can post online ads at, you know, I'd printed out copies of, and with my email address, was like, yeah, if you're an artist and interested, check these out, and, you know, put them on CCAD's door. I got nothing. I got, you know, that was like, the internet to this day and age is a huge
deal. some of those art students were like, no. I am a sculptor, you know?
Exactly. I mean, you know, why would I want to talk to some creepy dude that just is like, yeah, I got this idea. Nobody wants to talk to you about that. Absolutely not.
What do you hope to achieve with Disposable Fiction Comics? Since you just said, you know, a few moments ago that you never wanted to write for Marvel DC. So what's the overall goal? What's the objective?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's not like if they called me yesterday, tomorrow, and was like, dude, you want to do the Hulk? I'd be like, yeah, I want to do that.
Okay. Okay. So that door's still open.
Well, sure. But I mean, it's not, that's not my high end. That's not where I'm headed. You know, that's not my an original aim. My thing is, you know, I want to make this a viable company. Mm-hmm. I want to make it a company that can actually sell. And you think about the indie idea is really a crazy one. If you are a band and you're like, I got this album and I think it's really going to be good, and you send it all these record producers and they're like, no, we don't like it. You're like, well, I'm going to start my own record company then. Or if you're an actor and you're like, I'm going to start my own movie studio then. I don't care what you guys think. It's a behemoth of a task. It's really an amazing but self-publishers are doing it, and. You look at guys like Jeff Smith, you know, who's definitely kind of broke that mold as making it a viable trade. And again, I mean, if you're going to do it, this is the time to do it. I feel like that's my overall goal, is to kind of make it a viable business. Can I actually get this thing off the ground and actually one day make money at it? And that would be an amazing thing. And that's what I'd love to do. And like we were talking about before, and props to Victor Dandridge, by the way, for being able to, and Michael Watson for being able to do it as their full-time jobs. I think that's kind of a lot of people's goals. And if you could make just a small living at it, I think that's kind of the dream.
I mean, enough said. I don't.
Yeah,
that was,
right.
Yeah, I totally agree with you on that.
We're not greedy. It doesn't have to be millions. Just a livable wage.
Well, but
would be
you know,
great.
And like I said, I'm glad that you clarified that if Marvel called you. You'd say, "Oh yeah, I'll be in New York soon."
Right, exactly.
Yeah, so
I see by the cartoon crossroads, Kate Beaton said that if the guy with a Cadillac and a big pile of money comes in the back and is like, "Get in," and she's like, "Yeah, I'm gonna do that."
It's human nature. You will do it. Yeah, of course. I mean, I think
I'm gonna sell out as hard as I can as soon as possible. I mean, it's.
They won't have to ask twice.
That's right. Yeah, exactly.
You will go work for the man. All right. Well, let's talk real quick here. We'll start wrapping some things up. Disposable Fictions, disposablefictioncomics.com is where you can check out all of the different catalogs and order stuff and whatnot.
Yep.
You're also up on Twitter, correct?
Yep. At DF Comic.
Okay.
DF Comics. Was taken.
What? So,
I know. A little late to the game on that one, and you know,
by one letter.
By one letter. So that's, at DF Comic.
That's like a kick in the balls.
I really was. I'm like, yeah. Like,
one stinking letter.
I'd already had the name. What am I gonna do? You know, you only got so many characters. Disappointing.
Well, definitely, folks. If you're interested in comics, if you love comics like we do. Check out Jack's stuff. Go over to disposablefictioncomics.com and check it out, man. You know, some great stuff. So, anything else you want to throw out there real quick? You coming up on any particular cons coming up in the near future where you're going to be?
A big plug for, I think I will be at the Independent Creators Expo in January.
Okay.
But definitely check out Space. If you are in Columbus, come to Space. You know, it's the SPX of the Midwest, man. It's,
oh, most definitely.
Huge.
I
know you've promoted it.
Yes,
countless
and I can tell you right now, and I can't hype it enough. The new venue is phenomenal.
Yeah.
I mean, really cannot hype it enough. It's really nice. That Northland Performing Arts Center is top notch.
I agree completely. And it's always a lot of fun. I mean, you meet people from all across the country.
That, I had a very interesting conversation at Space with a gentleman. I don't even know who he was, but he thoroughly wanted to talk about communism with me. Which is probably why I should stop wearing the CCCP t-shirt that I have. Because, I was like, oh, okay, yeah, thanks, sir. I don't, you know.
Right, yeah.
Okay. In my head, I want to go, hey, old man, we won.
Yeah, right.
You know, but I didn't want to be rude.
Yeah, no, that's, I wouldn't say that that's representative of the people that you'll meet at Space, but.
Yes, that.
As a small minority of communism.
Before Bob Corby sends me a nasty email, I just would like to say that is not indicative of the people that are at Space. Just one person, one
guy
person out of the hundreds that were there. Anyways, and again, it might be my fault for walking around with a communist logo on my shirt. So,
there is one thing I do want to say before I go.
Go ahead.
And lastly, is just I want to just give a big shout out to Columbus Comics. I mean, the people that we have in this city that are doing comics are incredible, and. It's by and far some of the most interesting work that I've seen. You know, for the past year and a half, everything that I got from Space last time, I've been reading, and I think I've just finished it. You know, and it has all. There's an incredible amount of really talented people, and so perhaps to Columbus for at least being an incubator for that sort of creativity and for the people that are in here that can't for being very supportive of that community. I think that's that you couldn't ask for anything more from a city.
With that, man, let's just close up. That was eloquent. That was well spoken. I can't top that, Jack. So, Jack, thanks for coming on, man. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, John. I really had fun.
All right, I'm going to throw it to a very quick break, and on the other side of that break, I'm going to wrap up this episode. So stick around. There you have it, ladies and gentlemen, my conversation with Mr. Jack Wallace. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope you found it entertaining. I thoroughly enjoyed sitting down and talking to Jack. He's a very cool guy. He's a very creative guy. And definitely check out his comics, man. Go over to disposablefictioncomics.com. Follow Jack on Twitter, at DFComic. Singular, not plural. That's a totally different person. DFComic. That's where you can find Jack Wallace on Twitter. And jump on the hashtag Rick Santorum's Wet Dream, because I'm definitely using that. That was a gift, and I'm going to be
thrown that out on Twitter. So, and since we're talking about my Twitter, let me tell you where you can get in touch with me before we jump into Orlando's faves. First of all, you can get in touch with me on Twitter at PVDMVP. That's also the same username for Instagram. You can also shoot me an email if you prefer, if you're a little more old-fashioned, johnorlando@pvdcast.com. I love getting emails, by the way, so definitely shoot one if you'd like. Let me know what you think. Do you like the podcast? Do you hate the podcast? Give me your 2 cents worth. I don't mind. In fact, I welcome it. So with that being said, let's get into it. That's right, I'm going to cue the music here in a minute. There it is. And with that, let's go into Orlando's faves. I have two faves for this episode. The first one I'm going to start with is a blast from the past. I have just discovered on YouTube that two individuals have posted old episodes of Pro Wrestling This Week. Now, for some of you going, what the hell is Pro Wrestling This Week, or PWTW, as the kids would call it back in the 80s, it was pretty much a new show about professional wrestling. That's right, it was like CNN, if you will. Gordon Solie, Joe Pedicino were your hosts, and literally, they would cover a news story from every major wrestling company going on in America during that time. So you definitely got something from the WWF, you got something from the Crockett Promotions, you got something from the AWA. And then spattered among there would be Central States Wrestling, the UWF, Memphis, maybe something from Portland Wrestling. And it was just, they would show a little clip of a match of something that was going on that was hot in the territory or hot in the area. And it was really cool. And I just stumbled across it, that two individuals, I'm gonna throw them out there. Anthony's Man Cave is the one individual, and the other one is Trader Jack 641. To whoever those two individuals are, I give you a tip of the hat, if you will, for bringing back something that I haven't seen in 30-some-odd years. I remember watching it as a kid, and I was just glued to the TV, as I was with every wrestling television show I watched. But this one was really cool, because it was like a news program. It was 60 minutes for wrestling nerds like myself. So if you don't know what I'm talking about, just go over to YouTube and just plug in Pro Wrestling This Week, and you'll get a big giant list from these two individuals, Trader Jack 641 and Anthony's Man Cave, that will have dozens and dozens of episodes. So check them out if you're curious. Now, my second fave for this episode is something that, I'm not gonna lie, I saw it like maybe 5-6 months ago on Twitter, and I thought it was actually a joke. I didn't think it was a real thing, but apparently, thanks to Kickstarter, this project has been funded, and I can't believe that it is out there for yours truly, and for anyone else that's a fan of the show The Wire, to get their hands on this particular item. I'm talking about the Isaiah Whitlock Jr. talking bobblehead. Now, if you don't know what I'm talking about, then obviously you've never seen The Wire. And first of all, that's your first mistake, because it is the greatest cop show on the face of God's green earth. Love that show. I'm a huge fan. Isaiah Whitlock Jr. played the corrupt state senator, Senator Clay Davis, whose catchphrase was, "Shit." And yes, that's exactly one of three sayings that the talking bobblehead actually says to you. That's right. So for, I think it's $35, if you go to the Whitlock Academy's website, which is www.shit.com, you will be able to order your own Isaiah Whitlock Jr. talking bobblehead. And I don't remember what the other two sayings are, but they're right there. You can listen to them. You go to that website, and I don't even know if I can tell you or spell the website, because I don't know how many E's and I's and T's are in it. So, you know what? I'll just put a link on pvdcast.com where you can go if you're interested and check it out, because it's hilarious, it's awesome, it's epic, it's a lot of different adjectives. But there you have it. My two faves for this episode, PWTW on YouTube and the Isaiah Whitlock Jr. talking bobblehead. So, with that, I think it's time for me to wrap things up, ladies and gentlemen. I thank each and every one of you for listening, and I will chat at each and every one of you later! See ya!